is diversity?
It's there, it's marked.
Mark?
Yeah. Can you tell the number?
I think it's 33.
Okay.
I think it is.
What's the previous one was?
The one that you read out yesterday. This would be yesterday.
Okay, let's see the mark.
Yeah, you talk about the
one. Yes. So, today is 33. 1-12-33.
Okay.
Narayanam namaskritya,
Narayanam namaskritya,
Naram chaiva narottamam,
Naram chaiva narottamam,
Devim sarasvatim vyasam,
Devim sarasvatim vyasam,
Tojayam udhirayet,
Tojayam udhirayet,
Nasta prayesha badreshu,
Nasta prayesha badreshu,
Ityam bhagavata sevaya,
Ityam bhagavata sevaya,
Bhagavati Uttamashloke,
Bhagavati Uttamashloke,
Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki,
Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki,
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya,
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 Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Today we are going to study the Srimad Bhagavatam, canto is the first, chapter 12, text number 33.
Tat.
Abhipritam,
Abhipritam,
Alaksha,
Alaksha,
Bharatara,
Bharatara,
no, Bratara,
Bratara,
Achyuta,
Achyuta,
Chodita,
Chodita,
Dhanam,
Dhanam,
Prahinam,
Prahinam,
Ajaru,
Ajaru,
Udicham,
Udicham,
Dishi,
Dishi,
Purisha,
Purisha,
Tadapi pritam alaksha,
Tadapi prita alaksha,
Rataro chuta chodita,
Rataro chuta chodita,
Tanam prahinam ajarur,
Tanam prahinam ajarur,
Udi chandi shiburisha,
Udi chandi shiburisha,
Tadavi pritam alaksha,
Tadavi prita alaksha,
Rattaro chuta chodita,
Rattaro chuta chodita,
Danam prahinam ajaru,
Danam prahinam ajaru,
Udi chandi shiburisha,
Udi chandi shiburisha,
Tadapi pritam alaksha,
Tadapam kritve alaksham,
Rataro chyuta chodita,
Yataro chyuta chodita,
Danam dainam ajaruru,
Danam prahinam ajaru,
Udichayam dishi burishaha,
Udicham dishi burishaha.
Etiquette, first you let senior devotees chant and been asked to say something about Vaishnava etiquette. First senior devotees.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, you actually asked me to do.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You pointed to me first.
Oh, then it's
okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. It's just, we are here to talk about it.
Yeah. I appreciate that, thank you.
Tadapi pritam alakshaya,
Tadapi pritam alakshaya,
Rataro chita kodita,
Rataro chita kodita,
Danam prahinam ajiharur,
Danam prahinam ajiharur,
Udichyam dishi burusha,
Udichyam dishi burusha.
Tat,
his.
Abhipritam,
wishes of the mind.
Wishes of the mind.
Alaksha,
alaksha,
observing.
Bratara,
bratara,
his brothers.
His brothers.
Achyuta,
Achyuta,
the infallible Lord Sri Krishna.
Infallible Lord Sri Krishna.
Chodita,
Chodita,
been advised by.
Been advised by.
Dhanam,
Dhanam,
riches.
Riches.
Prahinam,
Prahinam,
to collect.
To collect.
Ajaru,
Ajaru,
brought about.
Brought about.
Udicham,
Udicham,
northern.
Northern.
Dishi,
Dishi,
direction,
direction.
Bursha,
Bursha,
sufficient,
sufficient.
Translation of the verse. Understanding the hearty wishes of the king, his brothers, as advised by the infallible Lord Krishna, collected sufficient riches from the north, left by King Maruta. Please repeat. Understanding the hearty wishes of the king.
Understanding the hearty wishes of the king.
His brothers.
His brothers.
As advised by the infallible Lord Krishna.
As advised by the infallible Lord Krishna.
Collected sufficient riches from the north.
Collected sufficient riches from the north.
Left by King Maruta.
Left by King Maruta.
The following purport was written by His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Maharaj Maruta, one of the great emperors of the world, he reigned over the world long before the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was the son of Maharaj Parikshit and was a great devoted son of the sun god known as Yamaraj. His brother Samvarta was a rival priest of the great Brihaspati, the learned priest of the demigods. He conducted one sacrifice called Sankara Yagya, by which the Lord was so satisfied that he was pleased to hand over to him the charge of a mountain peak of gold. This peak of gold is somewhere in the Himalaya mountains, and modern adventurers may try to find it there. He was so powerful an emperor that at the day's end of sacrifice, the demigods from the other planets, like Indra, Chandra, and Brihaspati, used to visit his palace. And because he had the gold peak at his disposal, he had sufficient gold in his possession. The canopy of the sacrificial altar was completely made of gold. In his daily performances of the sacrificial ceremonies, some of the inhabitants of the Vayuloka, every planet, were invited to expedite the cooking work of the ceremony. And the assembly of the demigods in the ceremony was led by Vishvadeva. By his constant pious work, he was able to drive out all kinds of diseases from the jurisdiction of his kingdom. All the inhabitants of higher planets like Devaloka and Pitriloka were pleased with him for his great sacrificial ceremonies. Every day he used to give in charity to the learned brahmanas such things as beddings, seats, conveniences, and sufficient quantities of gold. Because of munificent charities and performances of innumerable sacrifices, the King of Heaven, Indradeva, was fully satisfied with him and always wished for his welfare. Due to his pious activities, he remained a young man throughout his life and reigned over the world for 1,000 years, surrounded by satisfied subjects, ministers, legitimate wife, sons and brothers. Even Lord Sri Krishna praised the spirit of pious activities. He handed over his only daughter to Maharaj Angira, and by his good blessings he was elevated to the kingdom of heaven. First of all, he wanted to offer the priesthood of his sacrifices to learned Brihaspati, but the demigod refused to accept the post because the king's been a human being, a man of this earth. He was very sorry for this, but on the advice of Narada Muni, he appointed Samvarta to the post, and he was successful in this mission. The success of a particular type of sacrifice completely depends on the priest in charge. In this age, all kinds of sacrifice are forbidden, because there is no learned priest among the so-called Brahmanas, who go by the false notion of becoming sons of Brahmanas without Brahminical qualifications. In this age of Kali, therefore, only one kind of sacrifice is recommended, Sankirtana Yajna, as inaugurated by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Tad bipetam alaksha bratro chuta chodita danam prahinam ajarur udicham dishi burisha. Understanding the hearty wishes of the king, his brothers, as advised by the infallible Lord Krishna, collected sufficient riches from the north left by King Maruta. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Girunjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha Rupam Sagrachatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitantam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitancha He Krishna Karuna Sindo Dinavandu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Adakanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishpadi Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpataru Yascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayivacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vajnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare Hare. If I knew about the verse, I would have read from the Mahabharata just to remind me the complete story of King Maruta, which is a wonderful story. But my memory really fails me, so maybe some other time I will tell the complete story, which is found, as I already said, in the Mahabharata. King Maruta was a very pious king, very powerful king, and he was very rich, because he had at his disposal an entire mountain of gold, made of gold. So it's a lot of money. If people would have known where this mountain is, would probably go there and try to exploit it. During King Yudhishthira's reign, he wanted to do sacrifice, and these sacrifices were exceedingly expensive. So they discovered King Maruta's treasure, and they utilized that money for King Yudhishthira's magnificent sacrifices. Sacrifices are important for several reasons. Certainly, if we think of the way the sacrifice were conducted many years ago, you can see how disciplined you have to be. Because it's not just at the day of the ceremony you dress up, you go there and the Brahmana just like this. That's not a Vedic sacrifice. A Vedic sacrifice involves years of preparations. And and everyone attending must observe a strict celibacy for years before beginning, especially the king, who has to eat only once a day, and only certain type of food is allowed before, during, and after the ceremony. Not to speak about the brahmanas, you know, the various type of brahmanas, which normally are four, in different fields of the ceremony, they had to be strict brahmachari. Otherwise, nothing will happen. Not even the fire will light up. It just would be a complete failure. And the sacrifice meant basically both for disciplining everybody and for the satisfaction of the devas. If there is a foodstuff in this world, it's because there is rain. The rain comes from the devas. No? For instance, the places where there is no wind is very miserable, especially in hot places like this. You can barely see any wind here. You know, where I'm coming, I was just yesterday talking to my wife about the wind. I was reading something about Bayou, I was commenting, then we started joking about a little bit the difference between San Antonio and Puerto Rico. You know, Puerto Rico, much southern place, and it's supposed to be much hotter than here, but it's not, because there is always wind. Always. It's very difficult to find a day without the wind. So the temperature cools down a little bit. So this is important. It's important that devas are satisfied, because if they are satisfied, we have all facilities for life. And poverty is a good thing for spiritual life, but extreme poverty is not really the best, because when you have extreme poverty, then you become so miserable that you have no peace of mind to listen. So the poverty of a brahmachari, for instance, which is supposed to be poor, you shouldn't have any bank account or anything, you know, but still not miserable. The brahmachari should not be miserable. Brahmachari should be simple. Should have everything necessary for life, a strict necessary, so that it doesn't have to care about its maintenance, and it could concentrate on the practices of devotional service. On the other hand, also, wealth is not advisable, too much wealth, because then you become miser. You start worrying about maintaining. And maintaining a rich means to increase it. In this world, there is no such a thing as maintaining. Either you increase it or you decrease it. This is a very simple principle of economy. So you have to work to maintain it. You cannot really think to spiritual life. It's very difficult. So too much wealth is not good, and too little wealth is not good either. It has to be a balance. Here we are almost all brahmacharis, and so it's good to talk about a little bit brahmachari life, although for me it's a faint remembrance of my youth. Many years have passed since I was a brahmachari, but in my vanaprastha life is something very similar. So, because both brahmachari and vanaprastha, of course sannyasi, they dedicate themselves entirely to practicing Krishna consciousness without having to worry about his own maintenance. Krishna will think about your maintenance. This sounds like type of fanatic or simplistic definition of how we maintain ourselves. But truth can be established by a direct experience, and we have this experience. We have the experience that if we dedicate ourselves entirely to Krishna consciousness, we never will be in need of anything. We will have everything. Everything comes, and we just preach, and money comes, and everything we need comes. There's no doubt about it. This is a long time experience that we have. The more we worry about the money, and the less money we have. The more we care about preaching Krishna consciousness, and the more money we have. It just comes. So I had in mind to talk today about something with you. And since the other day I was reading some verses from the Bhagavad Gita, and I think it would be interesting to discuss it together. And these two verses are very famous verses. I think everybody is a pandit here, everyone knows the verses from the second chapter, 62 and 63. Dhyato Vishayam Punsa verses. Yayato Vishayam Punsa Sangaste Shupa Jayate Sangasam Jayate Kama Krodha Vijayate Krodha Bhavati Samoha Samoha Smiti Vibrana Smiti Brahmsha Udinasho Udinasho Arnasho. The last word is a verb. It's a terrifying verb. It occurs twice in this couplet, which is Nasha. Nasha Bhuti Nasho, by the rules of Sandhi, Sanskrit grammar, Nasha becomes Nasho, and Pranashati is the same verb, only that since the last verb has to leave impression, a strong impression, then is preceded by Pra. And pra is a majorative. Is that correct in English? Majorative? To make it stronger, to stress the point. So like Prabhu means a great human being, very great. You know. And every time you find pra, that means that whatever follows, it's particularly important. So pranashati means a devastation, basically. The understanding of pranashati or pranasha is utter devastation. So, devastation of what? We are talking, these two verses that talk about the spiritual life or the life of a human being. And we are here because we are interested in our life. We don't want to be lived by life. We want to live life. We want our life to be as we want. We don't want to be carried away by life and society and the values of society. We want to embrace the type of life that we actually believe that is the best life possible. And we came in Krishna consciousness because we know a different degree. At the present moment, we are sure that this is the best life possible for us. So, these two verses are a masterpiece of human psychology. Mm-hmm. If we study them deeply, we understand how human psychology works. It is important to do it. So, Dhyayato and Vishaya, the most important word which will accompany us, in the two words is the word Vishaya. And Vishaya is the sense objects. So we have desires. Why we have desires? Because the soul has desires. It's natural for the soul to have desires. And how how it works that a soul desire and satisfy his desire. So the mechanism is that this desire comes from inside and relates to something which is outside himself by the interaction of our own personality with something external to us. Then we have what we call happiness. So we have the internal desire to taste some food, and then we take the food, we project our desire on a particular object because we think, oh, this object corresponds to the particular desire I have. So I take it and I enjoy it because I think that this is what I want. This corresponds to my desire. So we have the personal desires and we have the objects. This object can be spiritual or material, but this is not the point of these two verses. These two verses talk about the material objects. And these material objects are called Vishaya. Vishaya is the word for identifying everything that we experience in our life. So everything corresponding to our desire for touching, our desire for hearing, our desire for tasting, our desire for watching, etc., etc. So these Vishaya are, in the material world, are representations of the objects in the spiritual world. We cannot enjoy just by ourselves. Even Krishna expands himself to so-called external objects to interact. You cannot be alone and enjoy. When you are alone, either you are alone because you are so miserable, you are just unable to interact with other people, that is, oh, I prefer to be alone. But actually, this is not a positive idea, this is a negative thing. Since you are miserable with others, then you want to avoid misery and live by yourself. But it is a general, universal principle that to enjoy, you have to enjoy with something else, not with yourself. Like in my native country, when you say something that doesn't really mean anything, I don't know if in English or any other country, it's the same thing. You talk to yourself, which means nothing. You don't belong. It falls down and it disappears the very same moment that you say something. So if you try to enjoy life without interacting with anything else external of you, then your happiness is not actually an happiness, but it's just maybe the best thing that can happen to you is that you don't suffer, but you don't enjoy. This is the case of what we call the Mayavadi. Mayavadis are people who do not believe in the existence of something external, that anything external is any reality. So they go somewhere, you know, and cultivate the philosophy of individualism, because they think that everything existing in this world is within myself, because I am everything. I am everything, so why should I need to interact with everybody else? So they shut down relationship with any external sense objects, whether persons or objects, and they stay with themselves. But they don't experience any joy, because joy is caused by interactions with someone or something else external to us. And that's why Vishaya is important, both in the spiritual world and in the material world. In the material world is important because it is important in the spiritual world. So how it works that we enjoy in the spiritual world, we enjoy because we interact with Krishna and our friends and everybody in the spiritual world. So we have a relationship. So from relationship comes rasa. You know, the flow in a relationship causes rasa. Rasa means the taste resulting from relationships. This is the meaning of rasa, putting it simple, it's a science, it's something a little more complicated than this. But basically, going to the essence, this is the meaning of rasa. So when we come down in the material world and we forget who we forget what we are, but we don't destroy what we are. We forget it, but still our nature works, continues working. But we don't know how it's working, we don't know where it's coming from, but whatever we are in the spiritual world, in the spiritual world continues to come out. So just like we want joy and rasa in the spiritual world, then we continue doing it in the material world. Interact with objects in the spiritual world, we want to interact with objects in the material world. So in the spiritual world, the first thing that you do to interact with somebody or something is by watching. You see Krishna, you see what a beautiful form Krishna is. It's the first thing. The most important sense in the spiritual world is the sight. So you watch it. And because you watch it, you know that it's beautiful. In the material world, it's the same thing. And in Sanskrit, watching is a dhyayata. A dhyā is the verb. So dhyayato viṣaya is the process of attachment to the material objects begins with watching. Okay, punsa means it's us, it's a person. So a person, punsa, watches the viṣaya, the objects, the person. And then naturally develop teshu. Teshu means attachment. Sangha. Sangha is a particular word. You know, Sanskrit is a very complicated language. Mm-hmm. Complicated in a positive sense. It's a very scientific sense and our language, and it has to be understood. Sometimes words in Sanskrit language are concepts. There are no, for most of the most important Sanskrit words, there is no English counter
synonym.
There is no synonym because it's a concept. A sutra. Sutra means a code. In a code, it's not a word. It's a meaning. You have to know this code. To uncode it, you have to understand the philosophy behind the word. That's why a Sanskritist cannot be just someone who knows the language. It has to know the history and has to know philosophy. Otherwise, they don't get it together. they don't understand. They cannot. Because Sanskrit is not a language. Sanskrit is a philosophy. So Sangha, Sam, is like Sankirtan. Together, Sam means together. A ga comes from Gam Gacchati, which means to go. You know? So the union of the person, unsa, and the object, which is the Vishaya, Sangha, they come together and immediately develops attachment, because it's obvious. If you go to somebody and you stay with somebody, it's because you like it. Otherwise, you go away. Mm-hmm. So that's why the union or the attachment is called, in this case, in these verses, is called Sangha. Sangha steshu pajayate. So when dhyayata, you watch the sense object, then naturally Sangha sanjayate, Sangha steshu pajayate, develop Sangha attachment, in affinity. You like change yourself according to what you are associating. Also another translation of the word Sangha is affinity. You become similar yourself changes, your mind, your intelligence, like becomes, it changes because otherwise you cannot stay with it. You had to assume similar qualities, not similar, but compatible qualities to be with a particular object, with a particular person, with a, in a particular country. You have to change yourself. You know, I traveled a lot, maybe Prabhu traveled more than me, I don't know, but we traveled a lot, and whoever traveled a lot understand this point very easily. When you go in a place, or you change, or you go. Like, I was in India a couple of years ago, and there is a good brother of mine who lives in Radhakunda. He's been living in Radhakunda forever, you know. And last time that he saw me, he was still criticizing the Indians and Rikshawalas, and because they do this, because they said, they do that. And I said, you have been here for 20 years, you are still complaining for these things? So either you change yourself and you accept India and the Shridam and the Vasis who live there, otherwise it's better that you go away, otherwise you are just miserable. You have to change yourself, you have to adapt yourself. So this is what the our psychology, our mind and intelligence does imperceptibly when he associates with any sense objects or person. He adapts himself gradually. How you say, sucks in some of the qualities. So it becomes, when you associate with material object, it becomes contaminated. Because otherwise it cannot, it's unavoidable, otherwise it cannot associate. Sangasam jayate kama. So what is kama? Of course everybody knows that kama means material desire. But what does kama come from? Kama is a different word for prema. So there is the same thing that we exercise in the spiritual world, that is called prema. In the material world, it's called kama. It's the same desire to enjoy that is natural for the soul, that in the spiritual world manifests himself in a perfect way, but when it comes in the material world, that is not perfect. And why is not perfect? It's not perfect because, for several reasons. The main reason is there is a fundamental incompatibility between the material world and the nature we are part of, which is the spirit. Spirit and matter are two energies coming from the same source, from Krishna, from the Purusha. Just like the stove, which causes heat, and the fridge, which causes cold. So we have two completely different, opposite results, but they both come from the same energy, which is the electricity. So there is something between the electricity and the final result that changes completely the capacity of the result that such an energy it's a long time, I don't give a class in English, I'm sorry. Can give or can produce, okay? So the same way we have the same origin, same source, which is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the same energy, which is the internal energy, which divides in two and becomes internal energy, external energy, because the mission of the two are different. So kama is the natural result of being in contact with something that you like. Sangha means staying together because you like it. And when you like it, you want to exploit it, you want to enjoy it. And this strong desire that we have to enjoy in the material world is called kama. that is material, that binds you in this world. You never going back, you are never going back to the spiritual world until this karma is not transformed back to its original nature, which is prema. Never. It's not possible. Even a small trace of karma, desire for enjoying independently from our own nature, from Krishna, it's not possible to go back in the spiritual world. So after, to conclude the first verse, there is something which is a little tricky, not easily understood, which is that from karma, Sangaste Shupaya Jayate, Sangha Sanjayate Kama Kamat Krodha Bijayate. So why karma becomes rage? Why? It's not easy to understand, actually. At least I found a lot of difficulty for quite some time. To not that I completely understood it yet, but maybe some understanding more than years ago may have got it. It's not easy to understand how karma becomes krodha, becomes rage. Rage. Krodha means rage. So when you have a material desire, two things can happen to you. Either you succeed into enjoying the particular vishaya, the particular object you are desiring, or you don't succeed enjoying it. So in the case you don't succeed in enjoying it, of course you become enraged because you are frustrated. And that's normal to understand. But why we become even more enraged when we succeed? Because when you don't have what you want, you give the fault to the fact that you are not obtaining it. And you say, no, I am frustrated, I am unhappy, because I don't have this thing that I desire particularly. So you have some kind of psychological excuse to why you are unsatisfied. But this is tricky. This is cheating from Maya. This is not the real reason why you are frustrated. It's when you obtain what you want that you actually realize that the happiness that you receive from enjoying the particular objects is not enough. It's never enough. Not only is not enough, you just realize that that's all. I've been desiring this thing for so many years, and that's it. And you understand, then there is a deep, well, of course, when you are a devotee, you understand, otherwise it's very difficult to understand, that there is a total, complete incompatibility between yourself and the external material objects. So you enjoy it, it's like water and oil. They are molecularly incompatible, they never mix. You can shake them as much as you want, they will never mix, because they will, how you say, reject. When you touch, they...
Separate. Separate.
No, but there is a word, when two things, boom, they bounce each other. How you call this?
Bounce.
Can you flip? Yeah, you know, anyway, repel. As soon as they touch themselves, they just, each of the two repels the other one. Because of incompatibility. The more you desire happiness, and the more happiness you have in this material world, and the more you become disgusted. Mm-hmm. Not only that you become like, okay, this is not maybe something else. You become really tired when you are intelligent. When you are a fool, then you just think, okay, this is No, but the next will be the good one. You know, materialistic people, which are like donkeys, they think that I am frustrated because at least it's not exactly what I want. But an intelligent person understands that that's it. That is not really what I wanted, and they understand. So why the richer people are, the more frustrated they are. I was reading there is a big percentage or rate of suicide between well-being people, rich people. The richer they are, and because they don't have the same excuse than the poor people. The poor people, they have something, some target in life. I'm miserable, but when I will become rich, then I will not be miserable. So they live in a dream. But the rich people, they don't even have this dream. They got it. And now what? What are we going to do with this? What am I going to do with my life? I have everything, just everything, but nothing. It's really. And then you become subtly enraged. It's not, you know, the Krodha that the Bhagavad Gita is talking about. It's not just yelling and screaming and going around and doing mad things. The Krodha is something internal, that you become bitter. You become someone who really deeply, deeply frustrated. Then what happens is that when somebody is frustrated in mind, normally it becomes like product bhavati. Bhavati is a verb, bo, which is the to-be verb. And this is a transformation of the verb to be. Krodat bhavati, sammoha. Sammoha. Moha is a little confusion that you are not understanding why. And you don't know what to do, you're lost. Sammoha means being lost. You don't know what to do, you're confused. And you go around trying to enjoy more and more. And then at a certain point, when somebody becomes intelligent, goes around for religions, trying to find some religion which will give him answers to the questions. You know, and that is not easy, because most of the religions in this world are cheating religions. Kaitava Dharma, that is the second verse of the Bhagavatam. Most of the religions of this world are not spiritual religions. At the best, they make you a good person, which is okay. Like in my native country, it's very Catholic, very Christian. Then, but when you talk to them, and I had as a preacher a lot of opportunities to talk with top theologians, Christian tradition, and they really never step in the spiritual world, in the sense that they remain in the sattva type of conception of being good in this world, but not that they have no idea why of the spiritual world. They don't know about God, what he does, where he stays, what is our relationship with him. They have no idea. When you talk to them, they always talk about faith, which is the most terrible word in my youth. And this is the word who made me reject all religions until I found Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada never told me to have faith in Krishna. Understand. This is the word. You understand. And by understanding, you will develop faith, of course. Because we cannot understand everything. So whatever we don't understand, we accept because you have understood something, some percentage of the absolute truth. And because whatever you understood and practiced is working, then you have a natural faith towards everything else you cannot understand. So first understanding, practice, and realization, and then faith. Someone has Smriti Vibrama. Smriti means remembrance. Like, for instance, we know from our upbringing that we have good people and we need to be in a certain way. But when someone is confused by rage, internal rage, sometimes external rage, and this is natural that whatever we learned, whatever we wanted to be, then it comes into question, and you lose the remembrance of what you had to be. Somehow, Smriti Vibrama. Vibrama is like, you know, the verb Vibrama means, you know, like the will of the wisp that goes there and goes here, you know, like this. Vibrama is a verb who gives the idea of someone or something without a clear pattern, something confused, something that is not precise. So Smriti Vibrama means losing the rationality, the rational in your life, and you don't really know what to do with your life. Vibrama buddhinasha, buddhinasha pranashati. Then your intelligence is lost. So what is am I boring you? It's okay? It's okay? Because we can talk something lighter, but you know, I had in mind to talk about this today. Okay, then when the remembrance of what you are or what you are supposed to be is lost, then the intelligence is lost. Nasha. Nasha means lost, destroyed. In pieces, scattered. Why is that? So what is the intelligence? And what is the difference between mind and intelligence? They're not same thing, they're two different things. So the role of the intelligence of buddhi is discrimination. Discrimination means that this is right and this is wrong. The intelligent person fortified by knowledge, he says, I will reject this and I will accept this. A person under the influence of mind will not choose in according to what is right or what is wrong, but whatever he likes and whatever he doesn't like, because mind is instrument that is based on sensorial activity. So it's irrational. It's whatever I like and whatever I don't like. But not always what we like is right. A strong person, a sage, a wise person, will do only those things which are right. They may like it or they may not like it. But he knows this is right, and I will do it, no matter how much pain it will take to have this kind of life. And this is important. This is important for us in our devotional service, in our devotional life, to be strong enough to do what is right, even though sometimes we may not like it. Just like when you are sick, you may not like to go to a doctor and take a medicine. The medicine may be bitter, the medicine may be... But you have to take it. So devotional life, sometimes we have to get up, not every day, we have to get up at 4 o'clock, and we have to go to Mongolartic, and we have to chant 16 rounds minimum, etc. Sometimes we like it, sometimes we don't like it. Still, we have to do it. And if someone comes, may come and say, okay, but if I don't like it, how, what should I do to make it like? There is no magic wand. You just have to do it. You just do it. But just do it. How long? It doesn't matter. Just do it. When we read in the Vedas the history of these yogis going to the mountain and stay there for thousands of years, doing unbelievable austerities, you know, we read this literature and we think that this is like legends. These are real history. So can you imagine? Project yourself, because it seems like fun, you know? You are a big yogi, and everybody in the States think of you doing... But they're alone for thousands of years, alone. They don't have this kind of television mentality that, yes, I'm doing because everybody's watching to me. Nobody's watching you. Nobody will never know. Most of them, you know, except Agastya and Bhrigu and Angira, a few sages, the millions and trillions of sages, so we don't even know that they have an existence. So, since you don't have the pleasure of being recognized by anybody, so how do you find the determination to do that? Mm-hmm. Now, this is difficult. And this is Buddhi, but you have to be really a Buddha to do that. You need a lot of Buddhi, a lot of intelligence based on knowledge. You have to know what is right and then you do it. So if they passed, many people, millions, trillions of people passed thousands of years just to be able to fly in the sky, you know, birds also fly in the sky, what's a big deal about that? But still, if they were able to spend thousands of years for such a trivial thing, material powers, which will finish anyway. So what about us, that we can obtain eternal life and bliss just by being a little austere, just by every day for the whole life, getting up at 4 o'clock and chanting our rounds, taking prasad and listening to Bhagavatam every day. So this may be an austerity. It's not maybe. It is an austerity. But by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, what you get, it's incredibly, there is a huge disproportion from the austerity that we put and what we get. We get much more. Well, the yogis or Mayavadis, the austerity they put and what they get is unbalanced on the other way. So this is and buddhi nasha pranashati. When you lose your intelligence, in other words, when you lose your determination, when you lose your knowledge, and you don't know what is right and what is wrong, and you are confused, you don't know what to do with your life, and you are full of desires, and you are full of rage, whether you satisfy them or not, and you are with material objects that today are here and tomorrow they will not be here anymore. It's a disastrous life. Such a life is very correctly defined by Krishna as a pranasha, which means totally disaster. It's totally useless life. So this was what I intended talking to you today. There is much more to say, of course, but I would like to receive some questions, if there are any.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for shedding light on these important verses. Now, if a person, you're in the process of Krishna consciousness, and it means you're doing self-examination, and sometimes we see how the tendencies of lust, anger, greed, illusion, etc. are affecting even devotees, because lust always comes accompanied with his five friends. It never comes alone. Beings always some friends for the party, because more fun. So
once we realize that we may have some residue, some traces of influence, what is the process of reversing, like here in these two verses of Gita, we have the sequence from where it starts and how it ends. But how do we can recognize this, and what is the process to reverse, to get back to our original state of at least Atmaramas Chamunaya or Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. We're not even talking ecstasy, we're just talking decent human being who can be aloof from these pushings, from these vehicles.
At the beginning of the class I defined the word Vishaya as the millionth stone, the first stone of the
foundation,
the foundation stone. It has another word, but anyway, foundation stone, if it's understood, is the stone that ideally keeps the whole building as it is. So Vishaya is the object, and everything begins with Vishaya. Begins with the observation of the sense objects. So the word Sangha is being used not casually. Sangha means attachment, because you associate, but you also get affinity, as I tried to explain before. Affinity. So the whole process of devastation of our life that ends up with pranasha can be reverted only if we change the Vishaya. In other words, or to be more precise, if we change the quality of the Vishaya. Because Mayavadi say that we should eliminate Vishayas, but we don't agree. That's impossible. They think that by eliminating everything external, then we'll get perfection. But this is not possible, because every person, as I try to explain, it is impossible that a person lives without interaction with something or somebody external to him. There is no rasa, there is nothing without interaction. So we don't have to eliminate the Vishaya. Of course, there is some kind of Vishaya that has to be eliminated. But most of the objects, or the person, the interactions that we experience in this life should not be given up. They should change the quality. Either we change the quality of the Vishaya, for instance, instead of looking to women, we can look to Panchatattva. That's way better. Or we change the Dhyayata and the Sangha. In other words, we change the way we interact with them. If we interact with women because we want to enjoy, that causes all the chain reaction that we have discussed in this lecture. But if we interact with the same person, but for preaching, then you see that like everything changes, all the chain reaction changes completely. It's like magic, Hare Krishna. It's like magic. It is incredible, like this, exactly the same. This is called in Nyaya, I don't remember the Sanskrit word, because it is called a superimposed value. The Sanskrit term? It has a technical term, very known with all the Nyayas. Anyway, it is not that an object has an absolute value. The value, it is superimposed by us. For instance, if we look to a... the value of a woman, for instance. Okay? So materialistic people look to a woman and becomes very attracted. But this woman can be the most attractive woman on the planet, but if a dog walks, it doesn't even look at her. It doesn't. Or a female dog comes and the dog becomes all excited, but we don't become excited looking the she-dog. So why is this? Because both of the forms have no, or like a sage, a pure devotee, you know, we may become disturbed by a form, a pure devotee looks at and doesn't become at all disturbed, like in the case of Haridasa Thakur and many other cases. So the values of the respective sense objects are superimposed by our mental projection. We give the value to this thing. And we can see in our own life that we were young, we liked a lot eating or sleeping or other things, and now we are much less, if nothing, if any, an attachment for these things, because things changed. But the objects are always the same. How can the same object attract us in a certain stage of life, in another stage of life, what is this, you know? And you remember how stupid you feel. I mean, I had my personal experience of feeling really stupid, remembering when I was 15 or 20 years old, I was attracted to things that made no sense whatsoever in my life. You see? So the point is that changing the superimposition, the value that we give to an object, and this is the best way to revert the devastating process that begins with Heyato, Vishaya, up to the Pranasha of our life, that is devastation due to this. Because if we try to become detached, by physically detaching from a sense object, will not work. Will not work. I remember Srila Prabhupada, he was in 74, and he came some paper from a GBC here in the state, and he was asking, and this letter was circulated in all the Eastern temples at that time. I was a secretary in the temple at that time, so I received the letter, and I read it. And this letter was saying, the GBC says that the brahmacharis, 19 years old kids, you know, really, if you remember, 19 years old, you are not a man, you are a kid. And they say, oh, they feel very disturbed by the brahmacharinis. And normally you expect from a guru and from a sannyasi a different type of answer. Like, yes, you know, you kick them out, they are disturbing our movement, and yes, make different temples, etc. And Srila Prabhupada answered saying, if they are disturbed, they can go in the top of a mountain. The brahmacharis. How is it possible to live in a world, you know? Most half of the people of the planet are women. So it's just not possible. If you are disturbed, just chant Hare Krishna. And so the point is that until we are able to change the quality of the superimposition of the value to certain objects, our attachment will not go away. It comes from us. It doesn't come from the object itself, because the object, the material object itself, has no value, has no attractive value. Nothing in this world is attractive. Nothing. If you really think what any form has, you see that there is no attraction. Just read the description of the spiritual world and see the reality of this material world, and you see that there is no. They cannot compare them. Mm-hmm. There's a vast, huge difference of quality. And you can have a life of eternal happiness in the spiritual world. And in this material world, you get something miserable, and it finishes. So you see the disparity. So you change the quality of the Vishaya by changing your consciousness, by changing how you perceive the value of the particular object. And how we do this? Chantare Krishna and whatever everybody here knows what we have to do. We have to lead a disciplined life, like getting up in the morning, taking a shower, going to Mongolartik, and to Lasi Devi, which is very important and particularly important. Srila Prabhupada said one time, we can have in our temple only Tulasi Devi. So important Srimati Tulasi Devi is. Tulasi Devi is devotion, is the real devotion. You don't get into Vrindavan, you get into an Indian town, but you don't get to Vrindavan without the mercy of Tulasi Devi.
Yeah.
And chanting your Bhagavatam, you know, every day, eating prasadam, and during the day devotional service. There is no better life. Don't stay in a temple. Don't think you can get something better. There's nothing better than this. Any question? If there are any,
Mr. Prabhu? How does it work with
I remember doing a nice parikram in Vrindavan with you.
Yeah.
I remember the monkey who stole your glasses. I told you 1 minute before, take off your glasses, and he said, "What?
Boom,
boom!"
It's
lost.
Monkey. Oh, right.
Please, man.
What about like absolute forms of beauty? If they are dependent on, or if there is no attraction as well, then how is it that some, like in poetry or in Bhagavatam, they compare things to the moon, or they compare, you know, to the lotus? These seem to be more attractive than others on the absolute level. So,
yes, these are just ideas. Since we don't know, we have no experience of the spiritual world to give us an idea, you know. As a form of you say the there is an English word that can find it, the depiction. We have experience of the moon, so that's why Krishna says like the moon, because if we would say like Srimati Radharani's face, we don't know Srimati Radharani's face, so it wouldn't mean anything to us. So Krishna is using because he's a teacher, he's a guru. Guru is someone who knows how to teach, otherwise what's the point of being a guru if you don't know how to teach? Mm-hmm. So what's the point of making analogies that doesn't tell you anything? So what it means absolute and what it means relative? Absolute means is the contrary of relative. Relative means that to have a value you have to have related to something else. No? What does it mean? For instance, the day is the absolute value, while the night is relative. Why? Because the night, for its existence, depends on the sun's absence in this part of the planet. While the day does not depend on the absence of the night. You see? So wherever is the sun is the day, and wherever the sun is not, then there is the night. So the night is the relative principle, and the day is the absolute principle. So the absolute principle is Krishna, because Krishna does not depend on anything and anyone to be Krishna. While we are relative, because to be happy we need Krishna. Krishna does not depend on us, because he has so many. Only from the rasa point of view, then we can see that Krishna to be happy needs us. But this is only for rasa, it's not tattva. Tattva means Krishna needs nobody. Everybody needs Krishna. So Krishna is the absolute, but we are the relative.
So you talked about that you can't enjoy without having a shared enjoying experience, right? Which to which I take should ultimately be with Krishna. So I'm wondering, so if you're eating some good prasadam, is it a mindset that you have that I'm enjoying this, but since Krishna is the ultimate enjoyer, that really the enjoyment is just for him?
No, the enjoyment is not only from him. It's just there are different ways how enjoyment works. Everybody has its own way of enjoying. And a different type of enjoyment, it doesn't work. You know, I will try to explain this point. There was a Roman general who retired from political life. So when he went away, there was a revolution. The worker, part of the society, rebelled against the administrative part of the society. And they say, well, why we should work for you? So they separated. So they called this general. It's a long story. That's the hint to explain the principle. So they went to this general, asked him, please go to the, that is called plebeo in Italian, I don't know how you say it. Plebeo. Plebeo means the worker class of society. Anyway, so please go there and try to convince them. So he went there and he said, one day the feet started to say, oh, I'm keeping all the weight of the body to go to work. And then the food resulting from my work, only the stomach enjoys. I will not work anymore. And the legs said, why should I move to give enjoyment to the stomach? I will not work anymore. And the hand said, why should I take the food and bring it to the mouth? And then the stomach enjoys, and I don't enjoy. Then, after some time, in the mouth also, why should I chew? To give enjoyment to the stomach. I will not chew anymore. After some time, all the parts of the body, since it was not eating, the stomach was not eating anymore, then it started to feel weak. And they were miserable. They were suffering because there was no energy. And they again met. I said, what's happening? So the stomach said, we are a part. We are a whole, and each of us is a part of the body. Your enjoyment is by nature a result of my enjoyment. Not that I enjoy more. You also enjoy the same as me. It's just that my enjoyment is direct enjoyment of the food, while your enjoyment is the result of my being satisfied. And what is the difference between the direct and indirect enjoyment? No difference. The result is the same. Everybody will feel satisfied the same. So in the spiritual world, not everybody enjoys in the same way, but the result is the same for everybody. Just like you cannot say that half a liter cup and 1 liter cup, where they are full, they are full. You cannot think, oh, the half liter cup feels miserable because it's less water. Because it is, by nature, it is a half liter cup, and it will be full or satisfied with half a liter. It's not the quantity. It is the quantity respected to your nature. Okay? So, Krishna is the Purusha in the spiritual world. He is the one who receives the direct enjoyment. And we enjoy by making Krishna happy. But are we less happy than Krishna? Oh no, because Krishna is not the supreme principle in the spiritual world. The supreme principle in the spiritual world, to whom even Krishna refers, is bhakti. Is the bhakti who is personified in Srimati Radharani. She is the supreme principle in the spiritual world, and even he refers to her for her own enjoyment, because without love, transcendental love, without prema, even Krishna will not be happy. So what does it mean? That everybody refers to bhakti, you know, for his own enjoyment. It doesn't matter how the result of bhakti comes back. It doesn't really matter, because everyone will be happy in accordance to his own nature. But even, and this is tattva. Tattva means this is the truth. Okay? Everybody will be happy in his own way, according to his nature, according to his own position, and everybody will be just same happy. But from the rasa point of view, because there is tattva, which is the, let's call it cold mathematical philosophical principle. But then there is something else which is not really calculable. It's not something that is really understandable. This rasa, it is the world of sentiment, of transcendental sentiment, which is in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, since bhakti is based on love, so loving somebody is more pleasurable than being loved. Everybody in the world, we all had that. Relationships with other people, we loved our children, we loved our mother, we loved our husband and wife. We had some idea that how true is, how much more pleasant it is to love than being loved. If you are loved by somebody, but you don't love him, then it's okay, I appreciate, but you know, I don't love you. So you cannot have the full appreciation. But when you love, even if not, even if he doesn't love us back, still there is a big, huge quantity of internal realization coming from this relationship of love. So this is so true that it's more, I could say, that is fuller, that is more meaningful to love than being loved. That Krishna, in his own position as Purusha, as someone to be loved by all the Prakritis, which is everybody else, and he himself understands that those who love him are happier than him, from the rasa point of view, of course. And he understands that, because to love, he also loves us, it's not that, but he loves us in his, from his own position of Purusha, which is different. Loving, you can love your, for instance, you can love your children, but you are an adult, it's different. When you are a child and you love somebody, we were children, so we had our paramours, and we had our girlfriend, a boyfriend. We remember that when we were young, it was like magical, it was something like, you know, something unbelievable, you know. So take this this example and bring it to the spiritual world. You can see that loving from the prakriti position is more powerful than loving from a purusha position. And Krishna sometimes wonders and say, you know, these people, how come these people look so happy? In love, I also am happy being loved and love them. Still, they seem happier than me, you know. And see my Radharani, how incredible she must. What is the swirl of sentiments and feelings that she must? I don't understand. So one day he decided. He said, "Okay, I want to go in their shoes. I want to go in the position of my devotees and understand how why they are so happy. I want to taste their happiness." So he transforms himself, you know, and he becomes Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this is how and why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came in this world, to be able to understand, because he couldn't, to understand how great is the happiness of bhakti experience from the bhakta point of view, which is different and deeper. So, in the beginning of the spiritual life, you should not make too many calculations that, I'm eating, I'm enjoying the eating, and maybe I should not enjoy the eating, etc. This is not something that you can calculate intellectually, you know. This is something that will come naturally. One day, you will find yourself, as you advance in spiritual life, you will find yourself into taking prasada with a totally different consciousness. But this cannot be artificial. You have to know how it works, of course, because otherwise you'll never get to the point. But you should not feel guilty if at the beginning you are enjoying prasada. Yes, you should enjoy prasada. And take a lot of prasada, enjoy it. And just remember that it is Krishna prasada, that he ate it before you. And the whole consciousness that from the pure devotee point of view is completely different, you will experience it one day. So I will be here last time Sunday for the Sunday class. Monday I leave for Puerto Rico, but we'll see again. I don't know on the other side of the planet. Mm-hmm.